Okay, this is just a little analogy. To me, it more or less proves that we are vegetarian and that we're not mentally made up to eat meat. If your wife or husband walks out of the house in the morning in the backyard and sees a squirrel run down off a tree and down along the walk, and you're nearby, and she or he turns around and says, "Hey, honey, come here. Look at this. Look how cute." You know, you come outside, and there's this little squirrel just running along. How cute, right? Now, if you had a carnivore, like a wolf, sitting at your side, he wouldn't think that squirrel was so cute. In fact, he'd run it to ground immediately, catch it in a second, rip it apart, not leave a hair. I mean, he wouldn't waste anything. Just eat that squirrel immediately. Rip it apart and eat it and enjoy it and look up at you with happy eyes. Now, even if you were equipped, which you're not, but if you were equipped with the dexterity and the speed and whatever to catch that squirrel, and you ran it right to ground, caught it, picked it up, and here you have this little squirrel upside down in your hand, and its little heart is just beating like crazy in fear and whatever, is your first desire to rip this little squirrel apart and eat it? Raw, just right there on the spot. I mean, just a tasty little morsel, a little snack of the day. You're just not equipped to do that. You would still think it's cute. In fact, once you picked it up, you'd have compassion for it, and you'd want to let it go. Which a carnivore wouldn't. Not in a second. And this, to me, shows the difference between the thinking of a carnivore and a vegetarian. And we're definitely on the vegetarian side.
Sure.
So, I just thought that was a nice little analogy to the subject.
Definitely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So. And it's always stuck with me, too. You know, that we basically, you know, it's, you know, actually we need compassion.
It's kind of interesting because, you know, when people who eat lobsters, they take a live lobster and they throw it in the boiling water. And I was watching on the television, and the people, a lot of times when they don't see it, they don't realize what's happening. But,
right. For
example, you know, the show, you ever watch Emerald on the Food Network?
I've watched the Food Network a few times.
Well, he was going to do lobsters. So there were these cute, you know, even to me, they're not really cute lobsters. But anyway,
right.
There's the audience, you know, all full of meat eaters. But when they actually saw him pick up these lobsters and throw them in the water, then all of a sudden their attitudes change. It's like, oh, what have you done?
Right.
And of course, he said, what's he going to do? He says, what's the matter with, like, what's the matter with you people, you know?
Absolutely.
But it's the same people who would think normally nothing of eating a lobster, but then when they see it, you know, this animal alive being thrown into boiling water.
And for the people that think about eating those lobsters, just one little morsel of food for thought, okay? Just like your liver cleans your blood, shellfish clean the ocean. So, like, you wouldn't eat, if you wouldn't think of eating, once I've told you, the dirtiest organ of the body, you shouldn't eat the dirtiest organ of the ocean either. If you're going to eat fish, I mean, in fish, okay, I say you shouldn't eat anything with a heart or a face, but some people advocate that you can eat fish deep sea, away from pollution, and know where the fish comes from. But absolutely never, ever shellfish of any kind. And the old myth that puts lead in your pencil is a myth.
If with mercury...
That's it. Exactly. And mercury is accumulative in your body. Mm-hmm. In fact, speaking of myths, one of the biggest myths perpetrated on man is fluoride. Okay. Everybody said, you know, way back when, in the 20s or whatever, they had this terrible pile of stuff out behind these aluminum places where they make aluminum. It's a, and that's what fluoride is. It's a derivative of aluminum, exactly. Which is very connected to Alzheimer's. In fact, the only thread that they can find in common with Alzheimer's patients is a buildup of aluminum in their bodies. And just try to find a toothpaste without fluoride. And all fluoride is a deadly poison that they can't bury and they can't take out to sea or whatever. And some idiot way back when said, well, it prevents cavities. Let's put it in the toothpaste. And everybody believes them, which is untrue. It does not prevent cavities. And it is a deadly poison, and it does. It is accumulative in your body. Your body never gets rid of it.
And you take it every day.
And that's it. And then you, when you wake up and you have cancer or something, you say, why me? And, you know, if you start looking for all the whys, you'll find them. And it's more likely than not that we force-fed ourselves the why.
Well, when you look at all the processed foods.
Absolutely.
You know, you go to the supermarket, and now they, you know, they have these things like... a healthy this or smart this,
right?
And or fat free supposedly this, and when you really read the labels, it's,
and that's what you should absolutely do, is really read the labels. If I don't teach anybody anything else in life, learn how to read labels. And if you don't understand it, you cannot pronounce it, you don't know what it is, don't eat it. I mean, why would you want to put something that you don't know what it's doing to you into your body? You know, the why me is there. You know, we're eating the why. And then we don't understand. You know, you say, you know, oh, what common thing do you hear when somebody dies the most? He was never sick a day in his life. You know, he never went to the doctor. You know, I mean, I can't understand. He was so young. Why? He ate the why. That's it. And then, you know, being healthy all your life and then dying all of a sudden is not being healthy all your life. That's only being fooled into thinking that you're healthy all your life.
It's like my mother says. She says, I'm my doctor's best patient.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. You know, we need to understand and to believe. And just because it's hard to do, and which I am freely admitting, it's not easy to do. If you're going to become a vegetarian, if you understand and believe that you need to clean up your eating and your attitude and living cleanly and trying to clean up your environment as best you can and fighting for environmental things that are trying to be passed, and, you know, to when you're senator or congressman or somebody writes to you and says that he's going to try and pass a bill for the environment or something for you to support him, and that you have to start believing, you know, and understanding all these things. It's to keep us alive, you know. To one of the great songs in the world, to me, one of the best lyrics ever written was by John Lennon, you know, Imagine. Mm-hmm. Just imagine if we all started, you know, having compassion. You know, you need to have compassion for yourself. Love yourself. And this isn't with conceit or saying that you're special or anything. Just to have compassion for you and your fellow man. You know, to want to help each other and to show each other the way. You know, and it's not... you can't force feed it, you know. I mean, the best way, like everybody says, you know, society is going to hell with itself, the crime is terrible and everything. And, you know, all the people that complain the worst don't want to make the simple change. And the simple change is in our children. You know, we have to start loving our children. You know, how many parents 20 times a day stop and tell their child how much they love them and encourage them? You know, our children can surpass us in many, many ways. They can do such great things if we don't build walls around them. You know, oh, little boys don't do that, and little girls don't do that. We cut them off. We take away their sixth sense. We, you know, you walk into a room and you see your son or your daughter sitting by herself talking to a friend. And you say, no. This, you don't have a friend here. They do. They have a telepathic connection with a friend. Their imaginary friend is real. We convince them that they're not. We take it away from them. We, You know, we have to love our children so much. We have to make such commitments. You know, I used to think that, you know, when I used to hear people say, you know, we shouldn't let certain people have children. You know, I used to say, oh, what a terrible, you know, Hitler thought like that. You know, what a terrible thing to say. But it's true. If you can't make the commitment, you have to make a commitment of 20 years, of the best years of your life, to loving your children.
Exactly.
To bringing them up correctly, to disciplining them correctly, you know, and to encourage them that they can do anything. And if you encourage them to that point, they will do anything. If every time you see them, you tell them to get out of your sight and that they're a pain in your neck and that they, you know, they can't do anything right, what do you think they're going to grow up into? You know, confident people that do the right thing? You know, your son is a bully. What do you think he's going to grow up into be? To be a nice guy? You know? You have to teach them love and compassion. When a child doesn't have any conscience and when they don't care about his friends or whatever and does cruel things, whose fault do you think that is? They're only living by example. They're looking at you. We have to love them. You know, because your son wants to play with a doll, you know, you tell, oh, little boys don't do that. Why not? It has to do with his creativity. You know, and having compassion and love and understanding and wanting to live happily and to spread that, you know, to not have everything microwavable, you know, taking the time to do the most important thing in life that you do, the very most important thing in life that you do is to feed your body. Not to take the time to do it correctly is foolhardy. I mean, that's inviting yourself into a cemetery. You know, if you take the time to eat correctly and to prepare the foods correctly and to wash them correctly, we can go on and on and on and on. Of course, it may get a little crowded, but that's okay. They'll work those problems out in the future.
That's right.
You know, everything has its place, and we have our place, and it's not in a cemetery, and it's not hooked up to a bunch of machines in a hospital. You know, when somebody says you have a terrible disease, you know, the best thing you could do is say, yeah, bullshit. You know, I mean, you take two men that are diagnosed with the exact same cancer, the same disease, the same death-dealing whatever. The doctor says, both of you, I brought you both in together because your disease is so identical, they can't be separated. You both have exactly about 2 years of great living. You're not going to feel any pain, no symptoms, no nothing for 2 years. You're going to do just fine. But at the end of the 2 years, it's going to be a downhill slide to death. There is no avoiding it. No matter what you do, that's the way it's going to be. And the one patient agrees. Says, well, he wouldn't lie to me. He's my doctor. That's it. And he dies in a year and a half. He's so agreeable. You know, he lets his subconscious mind help turn off his immune system. And he just puts, you know, he says, well, actually, everything's going to be real easy now. I don't have to pay any more bills, no more rat race, and everybody's going to feel sorry for me. So what better way to go? And the other one, he lives several more years, 20 more years, whatever, because he says, the hell with you. Who the hell are you to tell me that I only got 2 years? He says, I don't even have what you're saying. And he goes right on living like he didn't even go to the doctor in the first place.
Well, I think that's what happened with Michael Landon. Remember, he looked so vibrant, and all of a sudden they said that...
He closed himself down.
Exactly.
I tried to get in touch with him at the time. I had just come out of Hippocrates at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Jesus, I got to talk to Michael Landon. The only trouble is his protective network stopped me from ever getting anywhere.
Right, the protective network put him in.
Absolutely did.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't get to talk to, you know, you just can't go up to a celebrity and say, listen, I've got your answers. Yeah, but actually at the time I thought I would, you know, I wrote a letter and that trying to get, you know, and they probably wrote it off as a kook.
Yeah.
And he died, yeah. You know, and I'm still here.
Well.
So, you know, and The thing is, his cancer wasn't as bad as mine.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real ironic part.
Right.
You know, so he could have helped himself, you know, and that was also, it wasn't true because it was at a different time. But the thing is that Steve McQueen ran to Mexico for a coffee enemas,
mm-hmm.
you know, which some people advocate. The thing is that what they don't understand, a coffee enema, while may being a little helpful, it's such a shock to your, to the system that you just about don't survive it, which Steve McQueen didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it was too much of a shock. He was too far gone, and it was too much of a shock to his system. If he did it a more natural way, like through Hippocrates or something, instead of running down to Mexico,
probably would have survived.
He would have at least lasted a lot longer, you know, and a little more healthily. But, you know, you can't, you know, what's done is done, what is, it is. You know, the thing is that just for people to know that when a doctor comes in and says, you better sit down, say, no, I'll skip it. You know, there's other ways. You know, there are alternatives. When a doctor says to you, come and sit down, you have a problem, but which can probably be handled. More than likely, and there's several alternatives, and you have plenty of time to investigate on your own, or there's plenty of people to help you investigate, you know, and find the right alternative or the right way for you to go. Because each person really truly has to find out what's best for them. There are people that survive the medical way. You know, I've heard of people taking chemotherapy and surviving it, okay, and then not getting a recourse into cancer or that. But they're in the few.
Right.
Okay. Actually, they literally haven't changed the statistics on cancer 1% in 50 years. I mean, just think, what was 50 years ago? It was 1950? In 1950, probably 400,000 people died of cancer. In the year 2000, 500,000 people are dying of cancer.
But they're on the brink.
Yeah. Oh, but we're living much longer with cancers now. Wrong, we're not. And those that tell you that women live longer than men, they're lying too. Okay? Women do not live longer than men. They die faster than men, and they're dying much, much faster than men because they're more susceptible than men.
Right.
If you are a male that is married that smokes and your wife doesn't smoke, your wife is more likely to get lung cancer than you. Okay? And the reason why they say that women are outliving men is because they neglect to tell you that every 20 years the government, in all their wisdom, send 50 or 60,000 boys off to die. Okay? But actually, women are not. And women need to be more careful than men.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, my partner Rio, she was at the Optimum Health Institute, which is, you know, the same, basically, mm-hmm. As Hippocrates is pretty much a similar program, just like, you know, Ann Wigmore, mm-hmm. their institute is too. We're mm-hmm. so lucky to have some of these institutes.
Right.
And this woman had a double mastectomy, and the cancer had basically spread throughout her body. It metastasized.
Right.
And they said she was terminal, basically. The same story that they said to you, that she was gone.
Mm.
So she could barely get around when she came in, from what Rio told me, and tried taking the wheatgrass juice that they give at the institute, and could barely even keep it down, but kept trying.
Mm.
And Rio happened to be there for that institute over at Optimum for about 5-6 weeks. And about the time Rio was going to leave, she had a conversation with this woman, because it was amazing. This woman started attending all the classes, and she was getting around fine, and,
right.
and like was gaining back her health.
Right.
And it's funny. She says, you know, she says, this is the best I felt in years, and I don't care if my husband divorces me, if my kids leave me, no matter what happens, I'm going to eat these foods. I'm going to follow this
right.
regimen, because for the first time in years, I feel alive.
Right.
That's an amazing story.
Food.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Story. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the thing is that one of the things, I had actually called my brother and said, once I knew I was surviving and that I wasn't going to have a problem and that I was really inspired and everything, I called my brother and I said, Jesus, you know, you ought to document this. You know, I mean, I'm doing really well and all that. And the first thing he said to me, he says, you want documentation? I'll send you documentation. Okay? He says, I'll send you stacks and stacks and stacks of documentation. The medical world doesn't want you to know about it, but it's all there. There's plenty of people that survive. There's plenty of people that do well, and they do the right thing. It's just that it's mostly hidden from view. It's not, you know.
It is. Well, we had a relative in our family, Rio's brother-in-law. It's funny because even with your own family, when you're into this lifestyle, sometimes they look at you as the kook, the crazy people.
Absolutely.
Except when emergencies happen. We got a phone call that this fellow, he was a young man in his, under 50 years old, about 50 years old. And all the years I had known him, he always had a can of soda pop in his hand.
Right.
And either that or he used to smoke. I know he gave that up. He was brought up on white bread.
There you go.
And at one point he used to drink a lot. And goes to the doctor for something. Again, he wasn't, he just wasn't feeling well, had some other symptoms, and he thought it was something else. And it was what happened to you. It was sit down.
Right.
And apparently he had a brain tumor, and they told him that he had 6 months to live. And they said that, we could give you chemo, basically what they told you, but maybe it would extend your life
right. Just
a little bit. So they called us up frantically, and we said, listen, get down to the Optimum Health Institute or Ann Wigmore or Hippocrates, any of these
right. Institutes
Absolutely. That practice this. So he went down there, and this is somebody who was a total junk fooder, but he was following the program. And amazingly enough, he was there for about 4 weeks. When he came back, the tumor had actually shrunk.
Wow, now that's fast.
But now this, it shrunk a little bit. But you're not going to believe this. The doctor told him that because he went down to one of these institutes, and even though the tumor shrunk,
he's going to die faster.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
You hit it. They said he was going to die faster.
Absolutely.
Guess what?
He's still alive.
No. He died faster.
Because he told him.
No, it's not so much that it was this, we all need support.
Right.
And you said, well, your wife supported you and all your friends supported you.
Absolutely.
And everybody was behind you. In his case, everybody around him, their attitude was, this is hocus pocus. You know,
right. The
doctors know, what are we wasting our time for? He didn't get the support. He really wasn't able to continue on the diet properly. So what did they do? They fed him the ice cream, they fed him the cake, made him feel good, took him to the ball game, and,
until
it was time to go.
There's a perfect example of attitude killing you, and between your own and everybody else's around you. I had one fellow call me from Oakland, California, and he told me his wife had breast cancer and that he totally believed in the Hippocrates raw food diet and everything. He wanted his wife to go there, and he says, the only problem is that I'm fighting my entire family. They all tell me, including the doctors, that I'm killing my wife. I told him, I says, I know this is murderous for you, but you have got to keep up the good fight. You want her to survive. You have got to block them out. She's your wife. Her brother, sister, mother, and father, as cruel as it sounds, get her away from them because they're going to kill her.
Right.
Their attitude, they're going to infect her with it, and it's going to kill her. And it's the truth. He did call me back, and he succeeded. He fought the good fight, and he got her down to Hippocrates, and she survived well, and she didn't even lose her breast. And it's amazing that how much attitude counts in all of this, because actually most people don't understand. They say, what you really do have to try to understand, there are no magic bullets. There is no silver bullets. You have to put in the work. You're 40 years old. It took you 40 years to screw your system up. You cannot turn it around in a day. You can't run down to Hippocrates in 3 weeks and say, oh, I'm all better. Okay. You're on a better track.
Exactly.
And it's going to take time. It's going to take a minimum of a year, 12 months, to turn it around. Okay, and the longer you stay higher on the diet and attitude, you know, keeping your diet, attitude, and exercise together, you know, if you have a chronic death-dealing disease, whatever it is, from cancer to whatever other death-dealing, you know, heart disease or whatever, it's going to take time for you to turn it around. But it's turnable. You can turn it around. You can bring it back. You can come back to full health, you know, but you have to stay with it. You can't think that it's, you know, it's all magically going to happen overnight. There is no magic.
And the doctors will try and convince you otherwise.
Absolutely. And the very worst doctors, the one that I have the biggest complaint with, is the ones that when you tell them that you're going to try an alternative method, that they tell you you're going to die. You know, they literally try to scare you into staying with their way. Yeah. And in sticking with that point, those doctors, the ones that tell you you're going to die if you try anything different, you can guarantee one thing for sure. They won't be at your funeral. They won't be there to say goodbye. But they'll definitely be at your estate to get their bills paid.
Well, a classic story. Here's where the doctors like to experiment, too.
Absolutely. They'd like to do research on you.
Well, speaking of that, there was, just like yourself, you get calls, we get calls. We got a frantic call. Apparently, there was this this fella, he was in his 20s. We get a call from one of our, again, from the relatives who think you're crazy till, you know,
right,
till they hear something. This poor fella was in his 20s. And he had tongue cancer he was diagnosed with. Now, at this point, he didn't have any really bad symptoms. I mean, I guess he had, you know, swelling, or he had problems swallowing. Mm-hmm. So the doctors told him that they would like to perform an operation. It's experimental. And since he didn't have money, they were going to do this for free. Beware when the doctor says
right,
they're going to do it for free,
right? Because they're not telling you it's for research.
Right. So,
and you're their guinea pig.
Exactly. So they were going to cut out his tongue. And then they were going to take some muscle from somewhere else and give him supposedly an artificial tongue. This had never been done. So, of course, he would lose no matter what. Even if the operation was a success, he'd never taste anything
right
again in his life. So it's funny how life is, because I'm walking down the street, you know, actually, I had known about this, you know, I found out, I believe, that day. And sometimes you talk about God or interventions, things like that.
Right.
I'm walking down the street, and I see on a loading dock that I'm passing by a brand new Champion juicer. And I'm looking at it, I'm waiting for somebody to take it in. Now, there are people working on the street there, you know, there's activity going on, so I waited about a half an hour.
Right.
Nobody's taking this juicer. So I didn't know what to do, so I figured I'd pick it up, waiting for somebody to say to me, hey, put that juicer down.
Right.
So I pick it up and walk about a quarter of a block with it. Nobody says anything, and then, of course, my conscience is saying, no, you don't want
to, right,
you're not stealing anything.
Right.
So I went and I put it back. This went on for close to an hour. Finally, I figured, you know, I'm going to take it home and see what Rio says. See if she says, what's the matter with you?
Right.
Put it back. Or
right.
So I picked it up, finally, after an hour of going back and forth, and took it home. And Rio says, you know, this is some kind of an intervention. So let's send it out to California.
Really?
Yeah, to this guy. So I have to admit, I was bad. I sent them my older juicer, my other Champion.
Good for you.
Okay.
Good for you.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But so we sent it to him. Unfortunately, he never used it. He believed what the doctors told him. He was crazy,
right,
apparently. So they took out his tongue, and they did this, this half-assed, pardon my French, operation.
Right.
Guy couldn't taste anything, was totally frustrated. I mean, basically, they killed him. 26 years old, died,
right,
you know, died on a doctor's experiment. But yet, on the other hand, if it's, you know, you're doing something naturally, they say, oh, how can you do this? You're
right,
experimenting on yourself, you know?
So, right, absolutely. A couple of little afterthoughts, you know. God in all his wisdom, you know, when he put me together, you know, and I figured that he had the wisdom of ages, when he decided to put us together and create us. You know, I just thought about this. I thought of it on my own. I don't think I ever heard anybody else say it. But I truly believe that, you know, he did not give me anything extra. You know, as much as I think about it, you know, if he gave me two kidneys, I need two kidneys. You know, if I only need one liver, he just gave me one. One heart, you know, and all the other things in my body, he put them all there for a purpose. Okay? Maybe,
exactly.
Maybe the doctors don't know that purpose, but I'm sure that God knew that purpose. Okay? And you know something? No matter how much I think about it, I don't think that he gave me anything extra for doctors to practice taking out. Okay? I honestly believe that everything God gave me, I need to make everything else work correctly. It's that goddamn simple. And I, excuse my French, and I, for the life of me, you know, God did not put a zipper on my bloodstream. You know, he didn't put a doorway. You know, and for the best of my knowledge, that's that he must have thought that my bloodstream should be self-contained, that it has its own police force, and there's no way into it. And doctors, in all their wisdom, found a, just get a needle in there. That'll do it. That'll open it right up. And, you know, and with inoculations, and most inoculations are nothing more than the disease itself in a smaller dose. And
yes, we've heard some horror. I mean, it's what we're meeting yesterday, all about the inoculations and, you know, vaccines about the school kids being forced now. They can't go to school without
right.
it.
Absolutely.
And kids dying. I listened to this father. His the newborn baby, he had a newborn baby. It was something like 5 weeks old. And they said, okay, bring the baby in for the shots. The baby dead the next day.
Absolutely.
And the doctors won't even release the medical records on it. And of course, the first thing they're looking when the police come in and everybody and
right.
welfare, they look at the parent like, what did you do?
Absolutely.
And he says he mentioned, by the way, you know, the baby had had the vaccinations, had the inoculations yesterday. Did that have anything to do with it? And they just checked it off like it was nothing. They were more interested in looking to find something else.
Absolutely. It's a shame, you know. And in fact, most people ought to take one other thought to the doctor with them. You know, when you're sick and you're dying and you have a deadly disease and you're trying to fight your way back to health, how much common sense does it make to take a deadly poison to make yourself better? You know, think that one out. You know, and in fact, that's why I turned down chemotherapy and radiation, is because, you know, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out the common sense of taking a deadly poison to make me better. You know, what I want to do is get better right away and in the shortest amount of time without getting real, real sick first. In fact, most people, when they go with these diseases before the chemotherapy, they have their full head of hair and they have, you know, the right color skin and everything. Mm-hmm. And then they start taking chemotherapy and all these other things and they turn yellow and they lose their hair and everything. And common sense wise, they don't think that, and they get very sick too. They throw up a lot and, you know, lose their whatever little bit of food they can get in, they lose it. And they never think to themselves, Jesus, does this make a hell of a lot of sense? You know? And to me, it just doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. Whereas you can start eating correctly. The minute you start eating totally healthy, you start being healthy.
Exactly.
Okay? And what I mean eating totally healthy, that means totally. That means 100% healthfully. That means no pesticides, no chemicals, no artificial, no animal products. No, no, no. In fact, you want a nice little rule of thumb for life, take white out of your diet, period.
Right.
Healthy or not, take white. There is nothing that grows from God's green earth that white. It's not white. It's processed white. Take processed foods out of your diet, period. Stop the chemicals. Stop, you know, those little commercials from Dow Chemical, you know, wonderful life is with them.
Right.
You know,
or ADM, how they're helping the world, you know,
absolutely.
The supermarket, right?
Absolutely. Just go to any hospital and see how much chemicals are helping. You know, and people...
Yes, yeah. Speaking of hospitals, I heard a statistic of whether, you know, whether you like Ralph Nader politically or not. Everybody agrees. I mean, as a consumer advocate, he's
absolutely
the greatest. Ralph did a study. Did you know that over 300,000 people a year die in the hospital from hospital-caused death? In
absolutely.
Other words, deaths that are not caused by the disease.
Absolutely. In fact, a really terrible statistic is that over 100,000 people die a year of prescribed drugs. Prescription drugs, period, of overdosing on prescription drugs, from taking the wrong prescription drug, from doctors prescribing the wrong thing.
Exactly.
And other than that, they would not have died. And 100,000 people a year die of legally prescribed drugs.
Now they're advertising them on television. You can't turn on the television now. I mean, it's amazing.
Absolutely. There's a common sense thing. Here, they're advertising these...
The war on drugs, right?
Right, but they're advertising all these drugs, and they say, because federal, you know, actually, you could be thankful that you are in this country where they do have to say these things, as funny as they are. I mean, sometimes I tell my wife, these guys ought to be comedians. You know, they tell you, here's this new drug, Allegra. It's just a wonderful drug. It's going to help you do this, and that. But the common side effects is diarrhea, you know, your arms
death.
Falling off. You know, in some cases, you know, if you've ever had liver disease or stroke or anything, you better not ever take it. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And then at the end of that, don't forget to ask your doctor about this drug. You know,
and the people smiling.
Right.
No, the
Absolutely.
Smiling, having a great time.
I'm saying to myself, how many people would listen to that list of side effects and say, Jesus, I've got to get some of that. Just think, if I take it this afternoon, I could have diarrhea by tonight.
But the funny thing is the way, the way they say it. They make it sound like they're
with
selling
a smile.
Ice cream.
Absolutely.
And they cause death.
Absolutely. Sometimes I worry that there's some subliminal advertising being done there, that they're convincing you some way, you know, that you don't know, to go and buy it or something, because... For the life of me, I can't, you know, my wife and I constantly, when we're watching television, commercial television anyway, we see some of these commercials, and we actually, you know, laugh a lot, because, you know, we say to yourself, boy, how many people are going to run right down and say to their doctor and say, you know, how about this new drug? You know, maybe I could be real sick by tomorrow. You know, if I take it immediately, I could have, Jesus, did you see that list of side effects?
But the funny thing is, you know, it's when you present it, you know, which is like the big lie. You say it enough. See, it has to be working, because one of those 30-second commercials for, like, one of these products that we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
You're
very
talking
expensive.
About $500,000.
Absolutely.
Why would a company spend $500,000, you know, for 30 seconds to tell you about some drug? You know why? Because it's working.
Absolutely.
People are asking. I mean, since when, you know, prescription drugs, that's supposedly, you know, the doctor, you know, quote, you know, who knows everything, is supposed to prescribe that. But now the drug companies are saying, hey, ask your doctor about this. So you walk into your doctor, hey, doc, how about this? And you know what happens when the doctor prescribes it? Doctor gets a bonus.
Absolutely. Just say when you go ask the doctor, also ask him who bought some of the equipment in his office, the very expensive equipment that he uses in there. Just ask him who helped him buy it, the drug companies. Those are the little bonuses. When he gives you a sample of a drug, who do you think gave him a hefty little check on the side to go do with whatever he wanted to push their drug?
Not only that, they have I've read some of the paraphernalia from the drug companies where, you know, you sell so much of it, you wind up with a color TV, you wind up with
absolutely.
You know, something for your Mercedes, a little something extra.
And the other thing, just, you know, I use as a rule of thumb, is who's making the most amount of money off of your suffering? Just, you know, figure that. Every time that you go and you're going to spend a lot of money on your health, you know, because staying healthy isn't that expensive if you do it the right way, okay? You cut out all the things that you shouldn't be eating, and, you know, because everybody says, boy, it's really expensive eating organically and healthily and all that. If you take away all the foods that you shouldn't be eating, it balances itself out. Okay.
Well, not only that, you gave up your HMO, right?
Yes.
I gave up mine 2 years ago.
I don't have any medical insurance.
Neither do I. So at least if something happens to us, they're going to throw us out of the hospital real fast.
Absolutely.
They just sew us
up. In fact, there's a commercial about that, too, with the Discover card. Mm-hmm. The guy's on the table, on the operating table, and they take his card and they put it through the machine, and they wait. He's dying. He's in serious condition on the table there, and they're waiting to see if he gets approved.
That's funny.
Okay? If he doesn't get approved, dress him up, out the door. You know.
Better off out the door.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you know it. You know, and they make a joke out of, you know, things that are very, very serious. You know, it's not compassion that the hospitals have. It's the want of money,
exactly,
and greed. It goes a long, long, long way, and you know,